My name is Angie Brown, and you are listening to the Being Luminary podcast, the podcast where I get into all things diversity, equity, and inclusion with luminary guests, a sprinkling of coaching, advice, guidance, and the inspiration for you to do things differently in your organization. If you want to create a luminary place to work, a luminary experience for your clients, your teams, your communities, if you are committed to overleaping compliance and heading straight for luminary approaches to DEI, you are in the right place. You are listening to the Being Luminary podcast, episode number 59.
Hi friends, welcome back to the Being Luminary podcast. I'm going to talk today about meritocracy or the paradox of meritocracy. I wanted to start off casting back to some of my favourite literature and probably revealing something of the brainwashing, the whiteness washing of my upbringing, possibly all of our upbringings. I was recalling that my favourite literature when I was a child, my favourite books when I really started to get into reading were written by Laura Ingalls Wilder. They were the Little House on the Prairie books. There are a few things that really appealed to me in those books. It was the fact that Ma and Pa were so resourceful. There wasn't something that couldn't be fixed, mended, made. They were safe. The kids were safe because of the resourcefulness of their parents. And that idea really appealed to me. But more than that, what appealed to me was the idea of being frontiers people. And it's funny that as I think about the literature that I loved as I went to university and studied English and settled on various units of study on American literature, the literature that really stands out was the literature of the frontier, of European settlers arriving in America and being part of this enduring narrative of meritocracy that you can just thrive. If you set your sights on something, you can just make it. What's horrifying is that I was studying that literature alongside studying Indigenous American literature, alongside studying Black African American literature. And so clearly, what was being absorbed in my subconscious, in my psyche, was the idea that meritocracy was possible as long as others were expendable as part of the process. Of course, the meritocracy of the frontier is only made possible through the theft of land and the murder of Indigenous folks, and the meritocracy of the early settlers in America on land that wasn't theirs was only made possible at the expense of humans who were trafficked through the slave trade. So there's an interesting appeal of that frontier idea, and somehow there needs to be an intrinsic rejection of everything that needs to happen in order for that success to be possible. So a meritocracy, when we think about a meritocracy and what it is, what we typically envision is a fair system, a just system, and certainly a system that rewards the best, possibly the brightest, certainly the hardest working among us. The idea of meritocracy is that we buy into the belief that if we strive hard, we will do well. And the concept is used time and time again to justify the advantages that some people have while also explaining away the disadvantages that others face. Somewhat problematic, isn't it? If we go back to the frontier and we say, well, these Europeans who came here as early settlers were just very hardworking. And unfortunately, these ancestors of slaves, these people who were whose ancestors were slaves, they just haven't done as well. These Indigenous folks just haven't done as well. seemingly the idea of meritocracy already begins to crumble. Because the idea of meritocracy validates inequality by putting an enormous amount of emphasis on skill and hard work. And it continues to propagate the belief that success hinges on personal determination and prowess, brushing aside all of those intrinsic societal factors, all of those nuances. And it both implies a lack of competence or inherent laziness in those who don't achieve as much as others. And that's something we should all find grossly offensive. It's interesting that when we examine sectors of society where a meritocracy could be said to truly exist, they are also flawed. So I'm kind of interested in this paradox of meritocracy, because I feel like it ignores certain factors, but even when there is a meritocracy present, it kind of doesn't really exist. So I was reading an article written in the Independent newspaper. It was written a while back, so it's a 2013 article. And it was pointing out the gross underrepresentation of Black football managers, of Black assistant managers, and of Black coaches in the football industry, in the soccer industry, for those of you that are listening stateside. And this is despite football being viewed as one of the most meritocratic industries. You know, it's one of the most meritocratic sectors of sport. So, allegedly, anyone can do well. There are quite a few Black players. The discrepancy is then really weird, isn't it? Significant percentage of UK-born Premier League players are Black. This is what the article says. And yet there are no Black managers. So football players are recruited based on the belief that they'll enhance the team. You can come from any background. You can play on any team. You can do really well. Definitely make money for the team. But for some reason, Black players aren't viewed as then having the leadership qualities necessary for managerial roles. Interesting. So you can do really well as long as I stand to benefit, but you can't do really well based on your own skill and merit. Meritocracy crumbles as it is looked at through the lens of that particular sector. And that brings us to what's known as the paradox of meritocracy. So the paradox of meritocracy is a thing. And the paradox of meritocracy we see when we start to look at areas like our education system, where again, meritocracy is often thought to exist. But I think it is thought to exist and it is narrated in a way that's probably quite harmful for people who are in the system. Is actually quite pernicious. I remember when I was working in school, and my first job was in a comprehensive school, and it was a comprehensive school that then became a city academy. It was one of the first city academies, or certainly in that batch of city academies that opened first under the Labour government. And one of the narratives of city academies was that anyone could thrive in them. So they were built on the sites of schools that had previously failed in areas of multiple deprivation. And the powerful narrative was, of course, we're going to build this brand new school in this area. We're going to give the area the school it deserves, the resources it deserves, you know, the flashy new build, the new school uniforms for everybody. People are going to be wearing ties and blazers. And the ties and the blazers and the beautiful school buildings are going to mean that the children that come to this school can compete, for want of a better word, on the world stage of education. You know, they'll look like the kids from the grammar school down the road. Their school will be resourced in the same way as the school down the road. I mean, not quite. And the narrative in the schools was, therefore, once you come into the gates, once you come in through the gates of this school, you are just like everybody else. Anyone can succeed here. In fact, the outside external realities of young people's lives were often ignored, and famously in some of those academies, you know, no talk no street talk allowed in this school, no references to things that happen outside of school, friendship groups outside of school allowed in this school. Behaviour completely changes once you move in through the gates of the school. This idea that everybody could thrive, I think, is harmful because, of course, we know that context does matter and actually anyone can't thrive in society. In fact, studies have shown that despite a rise in diversity in areas, in areas of the education system like universities, you know, where we have a small number of individuals who come from less economically thriving backgrounds, or we have, ethnic diversity, where we have that kind of catch-all that we are opening our doors for a greater diversity of people in our universities. Actually, a small number of people have gotten through that system and have risen to the top, if you like, of finding success there. But arguably, that small number of individuals just allows universities, allows the system to say, yeah, look, you see, meritocracy really does work. When in fact, the tiny numbers, if you wanted to be really cynical about it, could be tiny numbers that continue to perpetuate the myth that meritocracy actually exists. And that meritocracy doesn't usually play out beyond university, doesn't it? Does it? So we might see that universities have become more accessible to people from a range of different backgrounds. But what we then do not see are people graduating from universities and going on to gain those high profile roles in society. And those people come from a range of backgrounds. I mean, our current Prime Minister in the UK is an example of that. Actually, he is somebody who we could say represents some ethnic diversity, but his actual background would suggest that he has not necessarily had the kind of educational or economic challenges, let's say, that others have faced. So I think there's a bit of a myth going on in the education system. And that paradox of meritocracy is also reflected in various studies done. So there was a study conducted by a professor at MIT Sloan School of Management, Emilio Castilla, and he looked into a company that claimed to reward high-level performance equitably. When he and a colleague of his did their analysis of the data, it showed that women, people who had ethnic minority identities, non-US born employees all received smaller bonus increases compared to white men. And this was despite them holding the same jobs, the exact same jobs. And what was interesting is that the study suggested that when organizations tended to promote merit-based reward systems, so they promoted their meritocracy, that various biases got in the way and undermined the very principles of a meritocracy. So there was a dimension of the study, and I want to get this right, where a group of people were put into positions of managing groups of people. And they were basically told that they were to reward bonuses. It's kind of a fake, you know, it was a setup. They were to reward bonuses to people. Typically, when the managers were told that bonuses could be at their discretion versus based on merit, those managers tended to favour women and people of colour and non-US born employees. So there was something about the managers when they were told that they could reward at their discretion. There was something about them, there was something about their understanding of the system that made them want to give bonuses, even though the performance of those employees was exactly the same as the white men. When the study removed the language of discretion, so when the managers were told it was not at their discretion, they just had to reward on the basis of merit, that's when those managers rewarded white men over the other candidates, even though they're all doing the same job. So it's really interesting that we all kind of know that the system is rigged. And as a consequence, we tend, without being told to do anything, you know, under normal circumstances, we will just naturally reward white men. I'm fascinated by this idea. I'm fascinated by those kinds of studies. And it's just made me think about meritocracies and where they exist all, you know, everywhere, and whether there can ever be a meritocracy that works for anybody. I feel like there are so many problems with the idea of meritocracy, but I feel like those ideas are so enduring. I was thinking about the coaching industry recently. I've been thinking about the coaching industry a lot recently. And I often tripped over by this idea in coaching that anyone can achieve a better life. This idea implies that systemic factors have got no bearing on an individual's trajectory. But I think we do need to acknowledge the systemic factors that exist in the world and shine a bit of light on the paradox of meritocracy in our own coaching practices. So when we work with clients, we actually do have to keep in mind that context matters. We do have to make sure that we're not unwittingly favoring certain clients over others, because certain clients seem to be doing really well with my coaching and other clients don't seem to be putting in much effort, or the effort that they're putting in isn't resulting in anything. It might mean that we need to adjust our approach to people's starting points and remain really carefully vigilant for the biases that we bring to things, and really take care not to perpetuate this idea of meritocracy in our practice. Do you see what I mean? I think that actually beyond coaching, as leaders and as entrepreneurs, we face different challenges if we come from minority groups or we hold minoritized identities. If we come from any unprivileged group, we will have had additional hurdles due to systemic inequities. So as a head teacher, when I came into being a head teacher and a school leader, I had a different set of hurdles that I needed to overcome as a consequence of systemic inequities. When I turn up to an interview, it is not the same as a white man turning up to an interview, especially for a headship. And so in overcoming some of those hurdles, I did certain things. I was really chameleon-like. You know, I would change my voice. I would be able to put people at ease. I did a lot of catching up in order to ensure that I was near in the region of the same playing field as the white man who was also going for the same job as me. Meritocracy really doesn't work when you are a black woman going for headship against a room full of white men. And it probably works in my favor when somebody has gone out of their way to advertise a role and say that they really are looking for candidates who hold minoritized identities. Because of course, if we go back to that study, when people see that it's at their discretion to reward people, then they probably do that over candidates who may be better qualified. And this is where we get in a pickle, isn't it? Because I sometimes think, did I get that job because somebody was just really, really committed to breaking the system? Or did I get that job on the basis of my merit? I both want people to break the system and I also want to get things on the basis of merit. But it's really unlikely that I am going to often get things on the basis of my merit when I look at the systemic inequities that exist. And it's one of the reasons that I've never wanted to be an example of what's possible, and at the same time, always wanted to be an example of what's possible. Because my success and my achievements are also contextualized within having a family of educators. Nearly everyone in my family is an educator, not just a teacher, but also a leader. I have women who are education leaders at the highest level in my family. And while they didn't give me a physical hand up, and while they didn't get me a job in their departments or any of that kind of stuff, what they did do was provide me with a very, very clear framework of the possibilities. There are all sorts of things that exist in meritocracies: social capital, cultural capital, all sorts of things that exist And I've been a beneficiary of so many of them. So I am not an example of what is possible, of what happens when you work hard, for every black and brown woman who wants to get into school leadership. And I've always been very, very careful to set that out. We need to bust the myths around meritocracy and understand that success is not just a matter of hard work. It's also about access. It's about access to ideas. It's about the privilege of access to ideas. It's about our privilege and advantage. It's about the opportunities that we can get access to. So many of those things are often overlooked in a meritocratic society. And my invitation, I guess, for coaches is to really think about that as you approach your clients this week. My invitation for leaders, for business owners, for entrepreneurs is to think about how you have got where you are. Is it solely on the basis of your hard work? Or could we capture a whole tapestry of different advantages that we have been able to lean into? And if that is the case, can we shine some light on them in order that we can not gaslight others who perhaps do not have access in the same way that we do? I think we need to be breaking down this idea of meritocracy and get real about it so that we can create environments where there are truly opportunities available for everybody, not just to those who seem to have earned it under what is clearly a very flawed system. Talent is universal. Absolutely. But the opportunity, the access, isn't. All right. I enjoyed talking about meritocracy with you today, my friends, and I look forward to chatting with you again next week. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Being Luminary podcast. I would love to hear your thoughts on the podcast, so please do leave us a review. Each month, I will be picking one of our reviewers to get a free laser coaching session as a thank you. And remember, if you know a luminary or an everyday thought leader who would benefit from listening to this podcast or who would love to be featured on the cast, then please do share it with them. This episode was presented by me, Angie Brown. Original music is by Martin Ostwick. The series is edited by Big Tent Media and produced by Emily Crosby Media.